Greetings, one and all. I'm glad to see everyone here, and special welcome to our visitors. Glad to have you as well. We look over the mass of humanity out in our world. We realize that there are billions of people out there, billions of people in history, who have never understood their Creator. They've never known that He has a name. They have never understood who His family is or what He expects from them and their worship. They have no idea that Yahweh has a plan and a purpose for this earth, and particularly for those who seek Him. We're told over in Genesis chapter 1:27 that we are made in the very image of Almighty Yahweh. It says, "So Elohim created man in His own image. In the image of Elohim created He him, made him male and female, created He them." And then He says in verse 28, "He blessed them and said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." Have dominion. Even at the very start, we have a key, a glimpse as to what our purpose is in this vast universe. His characteristics are reflected in us if we're created in His image. His characteristics like ambition, like love, and other emotions that we have. Man's desire is to create, and that is also reflective of Yahweh Himself. Yahshua said, "Yahweh works, and I work." You know, work is purposeful. We don't always like to do it, but it gives us satisfaction and gives us fulfillment. It gives us meaning. The Scriptures talk about that. We have a purpose and we build a house. The house is for a reason, to be inhabited, to be lived in. When Detroit makes a car, they make it so that it can hold people and transport them from one place to another. And everything about that car is designed with that in mind. You got the engine, you got the wheels, you got the transmission, and all those other parts that go together are designed to move on the road. It's not meant to sit in a driveway. When we look out into the vastness of the universe, do we see purpose or no purpose? Is there a reason it's all out there? Is there a reason there are millions of solar systems like ours with planets and all these other things just lying there empty? Is there a reason that they're there? Or is there a purpose for it? Isaiah 45:18 says the earth was made to be inhabited. And we also know that according to Luke 1:33, there Yahshua said there's no end to His kingdom. So there's a purpose out there waiting for something. And Yahweh is starting with a few chosen people in that purpose. And He has plans to expand that kingdom. It says of His kingdom, there shall be no end. So what does that all mean? Our goal as followers of Yahshua is not to lounge around on clouds for eternity, you know, strumming harps. Exodus 19:6 says of Israel, "You shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." And according to 1 Peter 2:9, that plan hasn't changed. He says His faithful will be a royal priesthood, the very same promise that He gave back in the Old Testament. The promise has not changed. The chosen will be busy building a kingdom without end, under the direction of Yahshua and with David under him, as we find in Ezekiel 37:24. I want to turn there, because this prophet gives us a glimpse into something very important. 37:24, "And David my servant shall be king over them." This is speaking of the future, of the millennial kingdom. "And they shall have one shepherd, and they shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them." So there's going to be a law in effect in that kingdom, and they're going to walk in those statutes and do His will according to His commands. "And they shall dwell in the land that I have given unto Jacob my servant, wherein your fathers have dwelt, and they shall dwell therein, even they and their children and their children's children forever. And my servant David shall be their prince forever. Moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them. I'm in verse 26. It shall be an everlasting covenant with them, and I'll place them and multiply them, and will set my sanctuary in the midst of them forever. My tabernacle also shall be with them, and I will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. And the heathen shall know that I, Yahweh, do sanctify Israel when my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them forevermore. We know that his law is going to go forth out of Zion to all the ends of the earth. And he says he's going to come and live ultimately, Yahweh himself, with man. Revelation 21, you can read about it. His throne is going to come down to this earth, and the truth in his government shall go forth out of Zion. Yahweh had a plan. He started with his chosen, and that plan continues, and he's adding to those chosen. You and me, if we're faithful. This key biblical truth is lost on 99% of humanity today. The vast majority of humanity are spiritual spectators. They just sit passively through life, like a fish in a stream, just waiting for whatever, you know, flows down past them, doing nothing to shape their future or prepare for it. They have no intent to do anything more than just sit and be content with life and live the life to the fullest as much as they can and just let it all happen to them. And really, they have no clue what will happen. But Yahweh's people have a prime opportunity. You have been called to be a participant in your life. You are learning about it and the great purpose Yahweh has. Not just leaving it up to happenstance or hoping to slip on by through someone else's shirt tails, or worse, ignoring your eternal life entirely. When it comes to his chosen, in Yahweh's eyes, there are only two types of people. There's the participants and there's the opponents. And there's no middle ground. You either are in it or you're out of it. That's basically what Yahweh says. Revelation 3:15, let's read it. You either are in it and a part of it, or you're not. I know your works, and this is to the assembly that of the Laodicea, you know, the old lukewarm, tepid assembly. He says, I know you're, and if you've ever had any lukewarm water, you like cold or you like hot. But lukewarm, ugh, you know, you spit it out. He says, I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I would that you were cold or hot. I would you're either on fire or just dead. So then, because you are lukewarm, you're dabbling in it. You're just going just far enough to meet the minimum requirements. And not even that far, actually. You are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot. I will spew you out of my mouth. He says he's not going to accept lukewarm attitudes. Politicians talk about the undecideds. We heard a lot about that recently. The undecideds. And I always wonder, how can anybody be undecided, especially when the issues this time were about moral things? I mean, how can you be undecided about these things? But there are millions out there who are. There's no room for indecision in Yahweh's plan. He will not accept a fence sitter. And he hates lukewarm attitudes because that is the mark of compromise. Going just far enough to get by, just to keep him happy, but still enjoy the things I want to enjoy out of my carnal attitudes. I want to go for all the gusto, and yet just in case, I'll just do a little bit to serve and please him. With Yahweh, it's either all or nothing. I live either for him or I live for myself. And that's basically what we're talking about. There's no middle ground. You know, we worship a power who is so immense and so great that all the billions and billions of stars in this universe and all these galaxies obey his very command. Only a word does he have to say, and he can change the whole complex, if he wanted to, of this universe. Stars that are so massive that our entire solar system will fit inside of one. He controls them by the word of his mouth. And you think about it, I remember I had a poster one time, and it showed a mountain, and then it showed a little boat on a lake in front of it. And it says, what is man that you desire him. What is man? We're not even a kneecap on a mosquito, you know, in comparison to this space, you know, and we're just molecules here on this earth, and yet he's been called, he's calling out, I should say, a few to follow him, to learn of his ways, one day to teach the rest of the world, and maybe ultimately beyond this world, about him, one day. I'm convinced that if people really, truly understood him, totally understood him, with total and complete conviction, we would have no division on this planet. No strife on this planet if people really understood the one they worship. You see, rebellion springs from ignorance. Hatred comes from a lack of understanding. 1 Peter chapter 1. You know, you sit two foes together, and they can finally, you know, put down their weapons and just talk. They find out, hey, he isn't so bad after all. But the fighting and the contention was out of ignorance. And it just grows. It has a tradition, and it grows, and it grows. 1 Peter 1:14 says, as obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lusts in your ignorance, this is before you came to knowledge of the truth, but as he which has called you is holy, so be you holy in all manner of conversation, behavior. Greek anastrophe is what it means, behavior, holy, righteous, according to his directives. Because it is written, be ye holy, for I am holy. And if you call on the Father, who without respect of persons judges according to every man's work, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear. You know, people who are passing the time in fear really have a humble attitude and are very respectful of Yahweh and his word. Fewer and fewer I see out there, fewer and fewer every day it seems that man is just turning wholesale against him. Yahshua told the Pharisees over in John 9:41, if you are blind, you should have no sin. What he means is they wouldn't be charged with that sin if they were ignorant. Yahweh doesn't, in your ignorance, that's one thing. But if you know better and still you turn against him, still you do your own thing against his will, then you are responsible for your behavior. Well, these men, they were certainly responsible. They, of all people, should have known. They were the leadership. They were the religious leaders, and they knew better. And yet, what did they do? They were out for self-fulfillment. They were out for glory and power, and they didn't like to see our Savior get in their way because he was a threat to them. And Yahshua, in no uncertain terms, would chide them very strongly. Why did sepulchers, hypocrites, serpents. He didn't mince words. Yahshua's very, when it comes to someone who should know the truth and yet does not follow it, Yahweh doesn't have an awful lot of patience for them. So here we have Yahshua telling them if they were ignorant, then it would be a different story, but you're not ignorant. Rebellion comes from ignorance, but these people knew better and still rebelled. The truth means to discover more about him and his ways. That's what it's all about. That's what we're on this planet for, to discover who we serve, who we worship. The spiritual spectators will never know about all of this until the 1,000 years of Yahshua's millennial reign, and maybe thereafter. Maybe you will be found worthy to teach. You know, we find that over in the prophet Isaiah, chapter 30. This is one of the most, I find, fascinating and yet humbling of passages in the scriptures. Isaiah chapter 30 and verse 20. Let's start there. And though Yahweh give you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction. Oh, wait a minute. I thought it's all health, wealth, and prosperity. When I come to the knowledge of the truth, everything should be just a downhill slide, just easy street. No, he says, though he give you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet shall not your teachers be removed into a corner. This is speaking of a future time, the millennial kingdom, the rule here on this earth. But your eyes shall see your teachers, and your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk you in it. Whoa, you know, I'm standing here ready to do something wrong, and I hear this voice behind me. when you turn to the right hand and when you turn to the left. Who are these people? Where did this voice come from? Chapter 49, verse 22 of Isaiah. 49:22. Thus says Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will lift up my hand to the Gentiles and set my standard to the people. And they shall bring your sons in their arms, and your daughters shall be carried upon their shoulders. And the kings shall be your nursing fathers, and their queens your nursing mothers. The great of this earth are going to be servants to Yahweh's people, is what he's saying. They shall bow down to you with their face toward the earth and lick up the dust of your feet. And you shall know that I am Yahweh, for they shall not be ashamed that wait for me. Chapter 61, verse 5. You know, we sometimes think, man, you know, all the adversity I have to go through in this life, you know, isn't there going to be a recompense sometime? Yes, there is, but Yahweh's testing each of us. And others who don't go through this are simply because they're not in the game. They're not in the race. But Yahweh is testing his true people to see if they have the right stuff. In chapter 61, verse 5, it says, and strangers shall stand and feed your flocks, and the sons of the aliens shall be your plowmen and your vine dressers. But you shall be named the priests of Yahweh. Men shall call you the ministers of our Elohim. You shall eat the riches of the Gentiles, and in their glory shall you boast yourselves. His chosen people are going to teach the ignorant, the Gentiles, is what the scripture commonly calls them. There's no place I'd rather be than among Yahweh's people, obeying Yahweh when Yahshua returns to this earth. Daniel chapter 8 and 11 says, and other prophets as well, say he'll come at a moed. He'll come at a moed, which is an appointed time. It's also the same word used for feast. Feast in the scriptures. We know there are seven of them listed in Leviticus 23. Some even without a great deal of understanding, do understand this. I remember it was about 20 years ago, a man wrote a book that says 88 reasons why the Savior will return at the Feast of Tabernacles, I'm sorry, the Feast of Trumpets in 1988. I don't know if you, maybe some of you might have seen that. A little thick book is kind of, half of it was written one way and you flip it over and the other half was written upside down. You have to flip it over. Anyway, it was really popular. A million of these things sold. People were just sure that was it. You know, 1988 was going to be the time. Well, if anything, the man woke up many to the fact that the feast still fit into Yahweh's plan. Says he's going to come at an appointed time. And as we emphasize in our outreach, the feasts are not optional. Yahweh doesn't say, if you have nothing else to do, come to the feast. He says, unequivocally, be there. He says over in Leviticus 23:2, speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, concerning the feasts of Yahweh, it doesn't say feast of the Jews, it says the feasts of Yahweh, you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts. 23:2 of Leviticus. If they're his, then they're his. End of discussion, end of argument. I mean, who do we serve anyway, ourselves? Or the one we worship. And what a joy it is to observe specifically what he wants you to keep, with no reservations about, well, is it right or is it wrong? You know, should I be doing this? Should I not be doing this? I know a guy at work, there was a discussion last year about Halloween. Should we be keeping Halloween? Is it right or is it wrong? You know, and he says, my faith doesn't allow me to do that. I'm a Christian, he says, and I can't in my heart keep this day that comes out of all this, historically pagan roots. When you observe Yahweh's days, there's no discussion. It's right there. And he met a whole bunch of argument, and they tried to twist it around and say, well, you know, it's a feast of the church. It's the All Hallows Eve and all of that. Well, yeah, it was made that afterwards, but it wasn't originally. But anyway, it was interesting to listen to it all. But what a joy it is to observe what Yahweh wants you to keep. And it really is. And we all look forward each year to his feast. The spiritual spectator says, let's have the world or the family decide what my spiritual walk is going to be. And it's a passive way of looking at their faith. There's no room in the scriptures for that attitude. It's something that we must consciously and actively do, either do or don't do, you know. You prepare all year to observe these feasts, for instance. You schedule time off work, you purchase items you need, you get the kids ready. You know, you prepare and you prepare and you prepare. It's a whole lot easier to just say, it doesn't matter, that's Old Testament. Or even worse, I don't see any need for these things, when Yahweh himself says, these are my feasts, you know, really. Read how Yahshua and the disciples and Paul kept them, if you think that. But you aren't going to get off that easy. Yahweh will not be ignored for long. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 5. There are a definite way Yahweh expects worship. And he says in Hebrews 4 verse 5, and this in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest, seeing therefore it remains that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached enter not in because of what? Unbelief. Disobedience. The Greek apatheia means disobedience. Apathy, we get the root word from that. Again, he limited a certain day, saying, in David, today, after so long a time, as it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Soften your hearts. Be willing to say, okay, whatever he says, I'll do. For if Yahshua, and of course we see that, he was talking about Joshua, the son of Nun, back in the Old Testament. The King James has an error there, which shows right there that that's where that J-E-S-U-S originally came from or was meant. That Joshua had given, if he had, Joshua had given them rest, then would he not afterwards have spoken of another day? There remains therefore a rest to the people of Elohim. A rest. There remains a rest. What is that? What's that rest he's talking about? The Shabbat. A day of rest. For he that has entered into his rest, he also has ceased from his own works, as Elohim did from his. Let us therefore labor to enter into that rest. Little play on words. Labor to enter into that rest. Lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief. Unbelief. Disobedience, in other words. What is clear is that there is a lack of a middle ground. We can't straddle any fences. We can't walk down the middle of the road. It's all or nothing. You don't worship Yahweh halfway. You don't dabble here and dabble there, make a few allowances here and there so you know your schedule fits and everything. You modify your life to fit the scriptures. And that's what it's all about. Idolatry is worshiping in any fashion other than what Yahweh has commanded. Over in Exodus chapter 32. Exodus 32, this was after Aaron, remember, made the golden calf. In verse 4, and he received them at their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool after he made it a molten calf. By the way, that was the chief Egyptian god, the calf. You still see it over there in India. They worship the cow. Came from that same place, ultimately from Babylon. And they said, these be your Elohims, O Israel, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. And when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. Aaron made proclamation and said, tomorrow is a feast of the calf. No, tomorrow is a feast to Yahweh. See what he was doing? Putting his own twist on proper worship. His own twist on it. Before this calf, making a proclamation as if transferring worship to this idol. And Yahweh said unto Moses, get you down, for your people, which you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They've corrupted themselves. Idolatry is worshiping in any fashion other than what Yahweh has commanded. It can be yourself. You can be putting you before your father. Any other way is idolatry. And choosing nothing is still making a choice. After Aaron made the golden calf, Israelites didn't say, well, we're now going out to worship the metal cow. On the contrary, he made a calf, and they transferred that worship to the calf because they had to have something to see and something to bow down to. And that's one of the reasons the commandment tells us not to make graven images of anything, of any likeness, so that you don't worship that thing. You can imagine what they would have done if they had found Moses' body. But Yahweh had to bury him, get him out of the way, so that there was no worship being done there. More idolatry could have occurred. It wasn't simply because they had an idol, but because they themselves decided the means and the way in which they would worship, not the way Yahweh instructed them. Making your own choices, doing it your way. Idolatry is worship done your way, no matter what way it is. Well, Yahweh never said to make an image to represent me, but they did it anyway because that was the majority religion of the day. They would make images all over the place. We read all about it in the scriptures. There's images that they took from Babylon, images they took from their captivity, wherever it was, and they hid these things, and Yahweh had to root them out because they wanted the religion of the people. They didn't want to be different. When we worship and honor Yahweh in ways that are convenient and acceptable only to us, in our eyes, that fit our traditions, that's no different than fashioning a calf and calling it true worship. When you say no to obedience, or when you look for loopholes or argue against it, you're taking a chisel and you're carving on a little calf because you're manufacturing your own worship and anything other than the truth is unacceptable. You made a choice. Don't expect blessings or the favor of Yahweh when you do it your way. Over in Proverbs chapter 14, we may as well go over there and, you know, to a mosque over here and start worshiping, because what we're doing isn't going to do us any good if it's not of Yahweh. There is a way, verse 12, which seems right unto a man. And there's lots of those out there who think they're doing right, but the end thereof are the ways of death. There is a way that seems right. There is an alternative out there, and it seems great to us, but it leads to death. Millions make their own worship and say they're worshiping the Father in heaven. I remember a door-to-door evangelist came on to our door one day, and we started talking to him about the Sabbath. And he says, I keep every day holy, so I got that covered. You can't tell me anything. I knew that wasn't so, because I knew his denomination didn't keep the Sabbath. This man's church didn't keep the Sabbath day. So I knew the Sabbath was not on his list, and he wasn't telling me the truth. Besides, the fourth commandment says, work 6 days, rest the seventh. Simple and clear. You can't keep every day a Sabbath and survive. You got to get out and work. That's what Yahweh wants us to do. Set one day apart. You can't keep every day holy. Trying to do so is idolatry, making your own worship again. I said to him, show me in the scriptures where it says that. Well, you know, you don't have to. You know, I mean, I just do it because that's what I feel is right. You know, well, the root of the word Sabbath, Shabbat, means to cease, to desist from work. If I keep every day holy, I'd starve. Yahshua told a parable about five wise and five foolish bridesmaids over in Matthew chapter 25. I want to read here because it's significant for us as we prepare for the time when the bridegroom comes to this earth. Then shall, verse 1, shall the kingdoms of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. Now, virgins would refer to believers. And they're out there. They're not the bride, you know, but they're bridesmaids. 10 virgins. And 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight, there was a cry made, behold, the bridegroom comes. Interesting that Yahshua would use this information to speak of a coming bridegroom that's going to marry a bride. Notice he says at midnight. And I'm wondering, is he going to come at night? Well, I imagine maybe somewhere on this earth it'll be at night, because we live on a round earth. He says, go you out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said unto the wise, give us your oil, for our lamps are gone out. They had some oil in their lamps, but they didn't have extra, you see. They weren't ready for the long haul. Now they needed oil. But the wise answered, saying, "Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go you rather to them that sell and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage. And the door was shut. And that's key. The door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgin, saying, "Master, Master, open to us." But he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not." I know you not? "Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour when the Son of Man comes." The bridesmaid's job was to prepare the bride to meet the groom, prepare for the groom. But because the groom hadn't come unexpected, the five foolish got lax. They didn't take the inventory of their supplies. They didn't attend to business. They slacked off. So when the wedding banquet finally came, the bridegroom came, the door was locked. They lacked the proper respect for him, and so he says, "I don't know you." When they had the chance, they didn't. They were negligent. Now he says to them, "I don't know you." The preparation for the wedding, brethren, is taking place right now. Right now. Some are slumbering and sleeping. I would say 99.99999% of the world is slumbering and sleeping. The preparation is underway. Is your lamp full? Are you faithfully making preparations to meet the bridegroom? Will you be the bride or only a foolish bridesmaid shut out of the promises because you weren't ready? You didn't take it seriously. The adversary has enormous resources at his disposal. And it's only by the will and protection of Yahweh that each of us is here today. Believe me. No doubt there were many obstacles and roadblocks throughout your life to be here. Things that you weren't even aware of that were supernaturally removed because Yahweh had a plan for you. Sometimes you had an inkling that something strange just happened. You ever had that? Whoa, what was that? You know, you can't see it, can't figure it out, but something happened. You know, maybe even you're driving. I remember my wife one time was driving and it was snowy roads, icy, and she was heading right for a telephone pole, and phew, the last minute the car all by itself just turned away. If we could only see behind the scenes sometimes into the spirit world, I'm certain that our entire attitude would instantly change. If we could actually see into that dimension of the spirit, Paul says there are principalities and powers out there that we're not even aware of, have no clue about. We'd have a complete and awesome respect of Yahweh, and we'd think twice before we entertain thoughts of displeasing him. Over in Ephesians chapter 6, it's a fascinating verse that reveals a lot about spiritual activity going on behind the scenes that we aren't conscious of or aware of because we're not of spirit essence at this point. Someday, his people will be changed into spirit, he says, at the return of Yahshua the Messiah. But at this point, all we can see is physical things. All we can react to is physical things. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12. "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood." You see, the real struggle is not against the flesh and blood of this earth. There are forces and there are evil things acting to cause people to do what they do. Of course, there's also the nature within man that we have to overcome. He says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of Elohim, that you may be able to withstand in that evil day, having done all to stand." And then he tells us how we do it. We take the truth, the breastplate of righteousness. We live by that truth. We don't just profess it, it becomes a part of our life. "And your feet shod with the preparation of the good news of peace, above all taking the shield of faith, wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked, the helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit." And then he says, "Pray always." Prayer is very important, something we don't always do enough of. He says, "With all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching therefore with all perseverance." and supplication for all saints. We can get a behind-the-scenes glimpse of a little bit of this activity that we just read about when we read about Job, you know, going before Yahweh. And Satan was there accusing him, saying he's going to fail, and, you know, all you have to do is give him a little bit of pressure, you know, make him suffer a little bit, and he'll just turn right away. Allow me to break him down a little bit. Let me work him over a little bit. Then you'll see the real man. Do you ever wonder if sometimes that same thing is happening in your life? The old Hasatan is there saying, let me just do a little twisting and a little bit of spiritual wrestling with this person, and I'll bet you what, they'll fall apart. Satan is called the accuser of the brethren. Revelation 12:10 says he points the accusation at us day and night before Yahweh. He badmouths us constantly. But does he ever have a point? Is he ever right? Are we guilty as charged at sometimes? Are we hypocrites, giving him ammunition to use against us, like some terrorist using our own resources against us? We know that demonic spirits can take over the lives of people. A spirit of evil can work in an individual, just as Yahweh's spirit can work in that person. Ephesians chapter 2:2. Wherein in times past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of what? Disobedience. That same spirit works in them. Remember, sometimes you meet an enemy. It may not be that person, but it might be the spirit in that person that's causing the problem. Because he says it works in the children of disobedience. We also had conversation in times past, lusts of our flesh, fulfilling desires of the flesh, of the mind. We are by nature the children of wrath, even as others are, is what he's saying. But Yahweh, who is rich in mercy for his great love, wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in sins, has quickened us together with Messiah. By grace are you saved. We can't earn our salvation. There's nothing we can do. We cannot earn it, but it's by Yahweh's grace. And yet, Yahweh expects us to be prepared, like those bridesmaids, to be prepared for that coming. Prepare our lives through our obedience to him, to show him that we are worthy of that. Most people behave the way they do because they don't know Yahweh. Sin stems from ignorance, as well as a lack of fear of Yahweh. People practice wickedness because they lack reverence for him and they love self more. And that goes for virtually everyone. If we humans truly understood Yahweh, we'd be fools to defy him through sin in any form. Israel saw how foolish they had been when they exposed to Yahweh's wrath, and they got humble really quickly, didn't they? I mean, you open up the earth and swallow 20,000 people, I think you got someone's attention, you know. But it didn't last because their love was not where it should have been. Children who obey their parents have a healthy respect and love for their parents in their presence or not in their presence. You know, they say the measure of a man is what he does when no one's watching. Children that are taught to obey will obey no matter what, whether mom and dad are standing there or mom and dad are somewhere else. But people who break Yahweh's laws don't understand Yahweh, and they lack the fear of him and the consequences. The message most people hear today is that you need to make no change. Don't need to do anything. He'll do it all. He will accept you regardless and give you all your desires. Just come as you are. Nothing required. It doesn't come any easier than that, brethren. No obligations. How wonderful. And millions are being lulled into this passivity, a spectator proposition, because they prefer it that way, having itching ears. Well, Yahweh does expect his people to measure up. The whole Old Testament is about that. Yahshua talked about it. You don't just throw it all away and say, well, just slide on by. That's not the message of the word. That's a message of idolatry, creating Yahweh in our image, not conforming to him. The Bible is all about change. Every one of the 66 books of the Bible talks about changing, talks about changing the way we live. If you can't see that on every page, then take off the blinders and start opening it up and start reading it. I'm sure, you know, most people think that, well, because of what they've been taught, that the consequences for sin won't happen to them. And I've talked to many, many, many people that way. And I'm sure those poor folks in the Twin Towers never in their life when they got up that morning thought anything was going to happen to them. And it was all gone in a blinding flash. Never in their wildest imaginations. And that's why Yahweh says there's going to be a lot of gnashing of teeth when they see Abraham and the prophets and the others in the kingdom, and they themselves shut out. But wait, wait, wait. You know, I knew you. He says, I never knew you because of your iniquity. Your iniquity, your lawlessness. Galatians chapter 6, verse 7 says, be not deceived. Yahweh is not mocked. I mean, you can fool yourself for a while, but you know, there's a kick and there's always the kick back. And Galatians chapter 6, verse 7 says, don't be deceived. Don't fool yourself. Be not deceived. Yahweh is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. You know, the motif of farming is all through the scriptures. Harvesting and reaping. You know, the angels are going to come in and separate the righteous from the... Actually, the wicked go first. This whole idea of the rapture thing doesn't square with the scriptures when it says he takes the tares first. And that's a whole other subject. But harvesting and reaping and sowing, that's all through the scriptures. What a man sows, that's he's going to reap. You put in corn, seed, you're not going to get wheat out of it. You're going to get exactly what you sow. And so the same thing happens with life. You're going to get what you reap. I mean, you're going to reap what you sow is what I should say. And it doesn't come any different. It's always that way. Be not deceived. He's not mocked. I didn't finish here. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that sows to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing. For in due season we shall reap if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity. The bridesmaids had the opportunity. A lot of them slept. Let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are the household of faith. Do good. Sometimes the message of obedience to the one we worship is offensive to people. They don't want to hear about obey. They attack the messenger. When that happens, then we know our objective is met. We're not here to tickle ears. We're here to give the message of the word. You know, when you go to a doctor for an annual checkup, he'll often, you know, poke around. How's this feel? That's okay. How about over here? That kind of hurts. And he'll press around various places and all the while, you know, does this hurt? How about this? If you cry out in pain, one of two things actually happened. Either he pushed too hard, or more likely, there was something wrong. And he says, well, we better do some more tests. It's not supposed to hurt there. And so it is when we speak the word. We speak Yahweh's word. And certain people cry out in discomfort, criticizing the message and the messenger. Either you push too hard, or more likely, something's wrong. In any case, we need to seek the great physician and his ways because it's not supposed to hurt there. Over in James chapter 1, James chapter 1 and verse 27 defines pure religion for us. What is it? People talk about religion, talk about these religious person. What is it all about? James 1:27, the highest, in other words. Pure religion and undefiled before Elohim and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world, physically, spiritually, morally, all these things, to become, keep yourself unspotted. In other words, you live your faith. That's what it's all about, living your faith. It's not something to do for 30 minutes once a week and you go back and live as nothing ever happened. You live your faith. You do what it says. That's pure religion. We're in training to learn how to walk with Almighty Yahweh and His Son according to His rules because we one day will be teaching those things. He says, you'll be a priest with me in the kingdom, a kingdom of priests. What does a priest do? He teaches the ways of Yahweh. and discover more of his ways so that we can be of value to him in that kingdom. Micah chapter 4, verse 2 says, "The law will go forth out of Zion." We're not talking about today. We're talking about a future time. Micah 4, verse 2. "And many nations shall come and say, come and let us go to the mountain." Mountain in the scripture typifies government, a kingdom. "And to the house of Elohim of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths." This is those in the millennial kingdom who will be trained at that time. "For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. And he shall judge many nations and rebuke strong nations afar off. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares." You know, anyone's been to the UN, you've seen that statue there with the man beating the sword and, you know, turning it into a plowshare. Interesting why it's still there. I don't know. Throwing the Bible out right and left. So someday somebody will figure it out. That's in the Bible. Take it out. "Nations shall not lift up a sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. But they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of Yahweh of hosts has spoken it. For all people will walk every one in the name of his Elohim, and we will walk in the name of Yahweh our Elohim forever." Forever. Well, in Acts 21:24, just a quick review here. Some people say, well, you know, you guys talk about obedience, you talk about the law, but I don't know, I don't see it in the New Testament. Well, let's turn to Acts 21:24. When Paul was there and there were many Jews there which believe, they're all zealous of the law, verse 20. "And they are formed of you that you teach all the Jews that are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying that they ought not to circumcise their children, either walk after the customs. What is it therefore? The multitude must needs come together, for they'll hear that you are come." It's going to come out, Paul. What are you? Are you for it or not? Do you teach the law or not? "Do therefore this that we say to you. We have four men which have a vow on them. Them take and purify yourself with them and be at charges with them, that they may shave their heads. And all may know that those things whereof they were informed concerning you are nothing." It's all lies. But that you yourself walk orderly and keep the law. And that's what he did. He went ahead and did that. In Acts 28:17, Paul said he had committed nothing against the customs of his fathers. Remember, he was a Jew, the tribe of Benjamin, which were considered Jews because they stuck with the southern kingdom back then, them and some of the Levites. And in Acts 22, as long as we're here, 22 verse 3, we find that he was not an iconoclast out to create a whole new faith. He was tied to the faith of his fathers. "Then said Paul unto them, Elohim shall smite you, you whited wall. For sittest thou to judge me after the law and commanded me to be smitten contrary to the law? And they stood by and said, revilest thou Elohim's high priest? Then Paul said, I didn't know that he was the high priest," and so forth. So we find that here he was being accused of that, and it wasn't true. Over in 22:3, we find in Acts, in his little biography here, autobiography, he says, "I am verily a man which am a Jew, born of Tarsus, a city in Cilicia, yet brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel, and taught according to the perfect manner of the law of the fathers, and was zealous toward Elohim, as all are this day. And I persecuted this way." Remember, people say, well, what do you call yourself? Well, those in the New Covenant, in the New Testament, are referred to as people of the way, that way, people some were even called those that followed the Nazarene. But anyway, he says they were zealous toward Elohim as all you are today. And he says, "I kept the law of the fathers." Here we find that he taught out of the law of Moses and the prophets from morning till evening. in verse 23. Again, question I always like to ask, who would you like living next door to you, an axe murderer? Or one, you know, one who has absolutely no regard for law at all? Or a family of commandment keepers? With whom would you trust your children and your loved ones? Your property? If the law is all that bad. The obedience to Yahweh is all that bad. Put it down into, you know, stark terms. In this uncertain world where our life could end by a bomb blast or a plague, Yahweh is really all we have. He's really all we can count on. He's all we can hold on to with complete assurance if we remain faithful to him. To learn his ways, to seek him with all our hearts. It's the most important thing in life. And it's all, really, what all boils down to, it's all we have. Because when it's all over, it'll just be you standing before your Father, reviewing your life. And he's going to look at it and see, were you faithful to me? Or was it all just words? May Yahweh bless you.